League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The multi-platinum award-winning rock and roll icon Kid Rock is making his way to Houston this summer. Catch Kid Rock and the Bad Reputation Tour, June 24th at Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion. Caller number 7 to 713-780-3776 wins a pair of tickets before you can buy them. Tickets go on sale this Friday at LiveNation.com. Caller 7 to 713-780-3776 on your way to see Kid Rock in the Bad Reputation Tour, which begins this summer at Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion. All right, so James Harden is saying that the rumors are he's not really loving his time in Brooklyn, doesn't like living in Brooklyn. He got asked by this by some reporters. I don't even know what report you're talking about, except he knew clearly what report he was talking about. I don't think he's going to go anywhere at the trade deadline. The Nets making it known that they're not going to be listening to offers for James Harden, which they shouldn't be. Like, if you're going to do something in the offseason.
Right.
Now, where do you stand on the idea if James Harden wanted to be back in Houston, because the grass is not always greener. Right now in Brooklyn, that grass isn't always greener than it was back whenever he was going to Western Conference Finals and coming short of going to the NBA Finals here in Houston. Where do you stand on the idea of James Harden wanted back in Houston? Would you be willing to listen?
So we covered all this yesterday in detail, and I believe that it was intentionally done because Paul was tipped off by Brendan that, what do we call it? Fired Up Joel is the best Joel to have. And I kind of went nuts on the fact that what was more puzzling and mesmerizing to me was any Houston fan of either team wanting Deshaun or James to play for their team. And we talk about parallels. But in particular, as it relates to Harden, and I said, even if I didn't know all the stuff that I know that a lot of people don't, when you have a guy that you've given everything to for almost a decade, and the minute that it isn't going his way with a chance to win a title, he bails on you. You never want to see that guy again. And when he realizes, like the scorned girlfriend, that once he left, he had it pretty damn good where he had it, but now he's with somebody else, but he wants to come back, I'm like, miss me, okay? Because you had your shot and you blew it. I'm not doing that again. So to me, it was infuriating to think of anywhere. And there were, and believe me, Twitter was loaded with, hey, we could take Harden back. And I'm like, and the other thing you don't want is the guy that's going to come in and say, it's still all about me. It's still my franchise. When Tad and Daryl are gone, it's not still your franchise like it was. And you're going to stunt the growth and affect the 19-year-olds that are trying to make a name for themselves and get touches and get experience and do all the things to come to try and be one of the guys.
I don't think that the Harden-Watson comparison is a very good one because Deshaun Watson's still on the team.
But he wanted out. That's where I'm going.
Sure, but you're going to get a return for Deshaun Watson. You're going to get your three first-round draft picks. Right, but now you're looking at it from a different situation. Like, if Harden comes back, it's probably going to be like a free agent. Mm-hmm. You're not giving up assets.
No.
So it's two different things. You're not giving up assets for James Harden, whereas if you trade Deshaun Watson, you're bringing back assets that you hope spark the rebuild of this organization going forward. Now, would you agree that you'd be a better basketball team with James Harden, yes or no?
Well, we just talked about one guy on an NBA roster can make a difference to make you a playoff team. I think you could be, yes.
I would be willing to bring James Harden back to Houston, but there are some conditions that need to be applied. And I'm anti-James Harden. I think I've made that very clear.
Let me be adamant.
Even
though I agree
with you,
even if I told you one guy can make the difference, yep, I still say absolutely, unequivocally no.
Even if it means that you're back into the playoffs. And
it doesn't matter. This
team
isn't about getting back to the playoffs. They got to get back on a regular, consistent basis, which means building up their roster again.
You don't think – now, James Harden history here. Let me tell you my conditions first, because the conditions to me are basically the deal breaker if he's not willing to accept this. One of them is he apologizes for his behavior as a Rocket, the way that he left, how he was a jerk to everyone, how everything was on his time, Harden. Like, he has to be willing to accept the fact and apologize for his past that it's no longer going to be that way. It's no longer my team and my organization, and we're not doing anything on James Harden's time.
Okay, I was going to wait for you to finish.
That's one
before
condition.
I crapped all over it.
Well, do you want to go condition by condition?
Well, because
or
that's
list all
the deal
my
breaker right now. Then you just tip your cap and say, James, good luck wherever you end up, because it ain't going to be here, because James's ego won't let him do any of that.
The second part of it is that he accepts that while he's still going to be the best player on the Rockets, he's not the franchise player in this organization going forward. That he's willing, he has to be willing to not stunt the development of Jalen Green. And in fact, you know, if Harden was committed to that, he could help Jalen Green's development because he is a willing passer. He's somebody whose game, I wouldn't say is quite similar, but he could teach him how to be that star. Now, again, you're talking about a completely different demeanor from a James Harden.
If the first one didn't get you, then the second one will, because here's the other thing. He's not in the business of relinquishing anything, unless your name's Kevin Durant, and even still, you know, he's not doing it for Kyrie, he's doing it for KD, but he wouldn't do it for Jalen Green. And the other thing is, the one thing that he believes his legacy needs is winning a title. And so he's not going to relinquish anything to Jalen Green when he still feels like the only thing he has yet to accomplish is a championship.
I don't think that he cares about the title.
Oh, I really do.
Why would he leave Brooklyn then?
Because Joel Embiid, because it's in so much turmoil and he's so frustrated by what Kyrie's pulling and the fact that you know, he's getting criticized and he wants to say it's because of injuries and otherwise.
Right.
And so he doesn't like I told you, he doesn't like to take hits from the media. He doesn't like to be put on the spot when you're the A team, having to answer questions and perform at the highest level at all times. He hates that kind of part of the deal. So that's part of the main reason why he wants out of Brooklyn. If he could get to Joel Embiid in Philly and know that Daryl and Tad are doing calisthenics right now to bend over backwards for him again, then he's going to be in that situation.
I'm not so sure that that's a better chance for him to win a title, though. Like, being with Embiid versus being with a Durant when he gets back healthy, the Kyrie Irving stuff is eventually going to go away at some point. Yeah, it should.
If I'm the Nets, I would already have traded him. I would have traded him to get possibly two resources that could make you better.
You're talking about Kyrie.
Yeah, because I'm not sure that's going to get better. And even if this one gets resolved, the next one's coming around the corner. His whole career has been nothing but these kind of situations that have nothing to do with basketball. And so I wouldn't be convinced. And even though he convinced James and KD that he was all in, he certainly wasn't. He said the same thing in Boston, and he certainly wasn't. And he pulls these antics. I'd be like, you know what, bro? It's getting later in my career, and a title really means something to me. You keep doing this, I'm not winning one, I'm out.
Well, Kyrie has more titles than Joel Embiid, and Durant has more titles than Joel Embiid,
right, but there's
too.
A hunger for Joel Embiid than to say, I want to get one.
Sure, but I look at the two situations, and if I look at Harden, Durant, Kyrie as having a better chance to win a championship than Harden and Embiid.
I don't disagree with you, Jeremy, if there weren't any outside distractions and the otherwise. And the otherwise, it's like Deshaun and the off-the-field stuff. If he didn't have the off-the-field stuff, there's no doubt in my mind he's a top-10 quarterback and better, and he's got all these different things. From a Kyrie perspective, I don't see how you can't evaluate the overall picture and include all the off-the-floor stuff with Kyrie.
And the off-the-floor stuff is you're talking about one specific thing that he doesn't have the vaccination.
No, he wanted to stay in Boston. He said he was here for the rest of his career. He did a Nike commercial about it. And then you know what he did? He bailed on him. And then he said it wasn't for him. And he didn't like the way he was treated. And then he's doing incense and all this stuff to try and, you know, clear the demons when he went back to Boston. And then the earth was flat. And then it was the vaccine. And what's going to be next?
Well, why does the earth is flat? Why does his opinion on the earth being flat have anything to do with basketball?
Because it became a distraction. And it became a big deal that they wouldn't let go. He didn't want to let it go.
Do you think that was a distraction?
He continues to create these off-the-field drama moments for the media and otherwise. And I think it would be fine if he was playing every game. But he's not. And KD's not getting any younger. And the fact that he knows in the Philly situation, they're going to give him everything he wants, and he's going to be the A guy again. Which, as much as he wanted to get to a winning situation to win a title, and he was willing, and I think it was better suited for him to be a B or a C guy,
yeah.
He also realizes all those extra perks and things when they just completely got down on their knees every day for him disappear too when you're not the A guy. And he wants to be the A guy again. Now, he might be 1A, 1B with Embiid, but because it's Daryl and Tad, they would elevate him.
See, I think that's what James Harden really covets. He covets the star power. He covets the stardom, the money, the fame. Like, winning's a good idea. Like, he doesn't want to be on a losing team. That's why he forced his way out of the Rockets. But I think Harden was always fine getting to the Western Conference semifinals, the Western Conference finals. To me, it's the reason that he dated a Kardashian. It's the reason that he, you know, looked at all the fame more than winning. I always thought that Harden valued the fame and the star power far more than the winning championships.
Here's the thing, Jeremy, and again, I was too close to it for too long, too, but the one thing that really aggravated him the most was that he didn't get even more accolades for what he did when he was a Rocket with the scoring and the innovation and the way he did the step backs and the things, the Euro steps and the things that, you know, kind of beat the system. And he wants more of the Barkley love of he's the greatest offensive player I've ever seen type quotes, which I couldn't believe Charles said. But the one thing that he knew would validate everything in his favor would be to get a title, because Charles doesn't have one, because Ewing doesn't have one. Malone and Stockton don't have them. So he could do what those others couldn't, and he knows then it would be unequivocally, you can't argue it anymore, he's a Hall of Famer. He's worried about all the individual things, like getting to the Hall of Fame, but he knows it's easier if he's got a title in his back pocket.
If Harden wanted to come to Houston, would you be okay with that? 713-780-ESPN. Look at a starting five of a James Harden, Jalen Green, Kevin Porter Jr., Şengün, Christian Wood. That's a playoff team. Playoff basketball's. You don't think that's a playoff team?
Look, again, much like we criticize others around the city when they decide that there's a chance that the Texans could be a playoff team next year, or that they would take Davis Mills over one of the top five quarterbacks in the draft last year or any quarterback in the first round this year. It's the same kind of thing. Like, miss me with this whole, that lineup's a playoff team.
You don't think it's a playoff team?
Not this year. Hell no.
You don't think that Harden, Jalen Green, Kevin Porter Jr., we're talking about next season because Harden wouldn't be coming here this year. Wood and Şengün, that's not a playoff team to you?
Nope.
Man.
Nope. No, not even close. Not even close. Not in the West. Not with every team that's in the West, and the fact that those other guys aren't ready for primetime yet. Look at how many mistakes, turnovers.
Well, that's why you're bringing in a Harden. Harden be the one ready for primetime.
Need I remind you when he was here?
He's a willing passer.
No, he's not.
He racks up assists.
Exactly where you know exactly where I'm going. Every time he'd pass you the ball, if you missed a shot, you weren't going to see it again if you were butt naked wide open. He doesn't trust his teammates. He's not going to trust younger players. He's going to bark at them and bitch at them every time they make a mistake, and that's not a playoff team.
4683 saying this is the dumbest question. No, I don't want him. I want this team to build a championship, and Harden can't win one. Hell no. DW and Harden can kiss his you-know-what. 713-780-ESPN. I'm a little surprised that most of the people that are texting in are anti-James Harden. Because you remember
Why wouldn't you be? He crapped on you.
Well, you had the mutual parting of ways. The way that the Rockets traded him was in order to benefit him. That way they could look good amongst players around the NBA. It's a big reason why they traded him to the Nets, and they were willing to cater to James Harden even when they were trading him. And Tillman Fertitta asked James Harden where he wanted to go to. Thank goodness he said Brooklyn, if you believe that was the best trade package that was out there.
Which wasn't.
He's still a very good basketball player. I mean, he's still one of the top, 10, 15 players in the NBA.
Makes you a better team. Not a good basketball player. The other thing that you should be concerned about, as much as he's adapted to fit the Nets and his assists have gone way up, his scoring, his ability to score, the shape you have to be in to score on a nightly basis like he was with Houston, that's all seemingly gone now.
Yeah,
he's a different type player. He couldn't carry the load the way he did the last time here.
I don't believe you're a champion at all with James Harden, not even close. Like, you might be cracking the playoffs. I believe that James Harden, I said this when James Harden was in his prime, that James Harden's never going to be the best player on a championship team.
I've said it too.
But it is a winner, right? I mean, I say winner. Like, you're going to win more games if you were to do that. You were going to win more games if you had Deshaun Watson. So it's kind of interesting, like, the opinion just right now that Deshaun Watson and Harden can kiss my you-know-what. Saying that means that you're not going to win games in the short term, though. Like,
but I think
both of those guys are good.
But I think the city of Houston has finally come to grips with that. They're not getting brainwashed every day by both teams having press conferences telling you we're a championship-caliber team. We're a championship-caliber organization. Our goals are still to win titles and get to the playoffs, when realistically your rosters aren't. And the people and the personnel that you're putting in place to make decisions aren't. So you can't – and eventually one day they wake up, get out of bed, and it's, you know, the anvil smacks them in the head from Wile E. Coyote, and they go, oh, wait a minute, we're rebuilding now. So that now, at least from a Houston perspective, they've come to grips with, it's not about winning for a year or two. It's about getting back to where you were from the Rockets, 8 straight appearances with Harden to at least make the playoffs and go deeper. From a Texans perspective, winning your division or getting in and winning at least one playoff game and doing things. It's the longer run, not the short term.
And that's going to take a long time. Like, the longer run to me is like the key word there, because it is going to take a long time to get to that, you know, caliber. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we return, I'm tired about hearing about experience and resume. I'll tell you what I mean next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Hey, right now I want to tell you about Frankie's Italian Kitchen. Look, Chris called me this weekend from Frankie's and said, I can't tell you how many listeners are in my dining room right now because of you enjoying my food, and I couldn't be happier. I couldn't be happier. I was like, no, I'm thanking you because we're getting the word out to a whole part of town that otherwise wouldn't know about Frankie's Italian Kitchen and now know it's the best Italian food in the freaking city. Chris is not only the owner, he's the chef. He makes the food, and he makes it fresh every single day. It means from the produce being fresh to the cheese being from Wisconsin to the Italian sausage from College Station. Everything is made with his own personal touch to make sure it tastes the best and he says it's suited for your family. He doesn't want it to be a foo-foo restaurant with high prices and starch collars. No, he wants it for you and your family to be able to come in, relax, spread out, have some fun, and be in like a family atmosphere where the food is great and you're going to leave full and so is your wallet because the prices aren't going to knock you down. It's absolutely to die for food. I've tried just about everything on the menu. If you want to go with traditional fare like pizza or even all their different varieties of wings, they are top-notch. But if you want to go diving deep into all those real Italian dishes, the lasagna, the beef stroganoff, and all those types of options, you got to go to Frankie's Italian Kitchen. It's in the Fulshear, Sugarland, Katy Richmond area, but it's worth the drive. And I'm telling you, go to the menu right now, frankiesitaliankitchentx.com, and check it quite frequently because you're going to find out there are weekly specials. They only last as long as the ingredients do. But if you can catch one of them, you're going to catch something not on the menu that is going to make you want to come back again and again. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. It's the good people at frankiesitaliankitchentx.com.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Heard the bench.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, so I'm tired about hearing about experience and resume. It's what a bunch of people who talk behind a microphone, they try to determine that they're very good at evaluating candidates based on their experience and resume. The next head coach of name your team, insert your team. They need to hire this guy because he has 5 years as a defensive coordinator. He's got 8 years under Belichick. You know what that tells me? It tells me you're not talking to the candidate. You're not talking to the actual guy that's across the room who you're trying to evaluate, who's going to be the best dude to lead your organization going forward. This thought is inspired by Josh McCown, of course, and you guys had on Jason Fitz yesterday, who's on the complete opposite side as me. He says that hiring somebody with no experience is flat out stupid.
You can look at all of the turmoil, and I think there's been so many things that have impacted the Texans that you have to look at it at some point and say, okay, what is the real restart? Now, if you're telling me that you're firing a coach 1 year in because you're bringing in somebody that you believe has a better direction, that has a better plan, that has more experience, all of those factors, maybe I can buy that. If you're telling me that you just rolled all of your money into the craps table and now you're just going to go to a different craps table, like, that feels weird to me.
It's an interesting comparison by Jason Fitz, who does really good stuff, and good guess by Brendan locking him in yesterday. But who you hire, like, if you're a hiring manager for any specific position, like, yes, to get into that interview room, to get into the office, you're going to have a resume that allows you to get into the office, that you had to do something in your career for you to deserve that interview. But once you're across the room with the hiring manager, like, everything else should be obsolete. Nothing else should matter. And the GM's job and a hiring manager's job is to hire the candidate that's going to do the best job for the next 5 to 7 to 10 years, not what they did in the previous 5 to 7 to 10 years. The most important job for any general manager is to try to predict the future. You're trying to predict what's going to give you the most success. You're not going to sit here and live like in the history and bring in these old players because they had really good success for the last 5 seasons. That does not translate to the future. It does not translate to going forward. I bash Nick Caserio for not having the foresight to realize what Zach Cunningham was going to look like in a 4-3 and to trade him while he had value. Like, what you did in the past does not matter. The job of the GM is to forecast what a player is going to be, what a head coach is going to be, what a coordinator is going to be.
I hear you what you're saying, but what you do in the past does matter. And I understand from a resume perspective, I get the drift that you're throwing at me. But what I'm here to tell you is whether you do it from a resume building standpoint and something you can put on paper, or you've just had the right conversations with the right people to prove to people, this guy knows what he's talking about. He knows the game. He knows the X's and O's. He has a grasp of what it takes to be a guy that could be a leader of men and or a CEO or a coordinator or something like that. I totally get all that. But I also think where I would push back a little bit too is whether your resume gets you in the door or not, it really doesn't matter that much. But when you do sit down with whoever you're interviewing, that's when it's all on you. That's when the switch is on you and only you. And you, it's your time to shine, baby. And if you do, a lot of great things can happen. But if you don't, whether you're George O'Leary and your resume on top of other things kills you, or the fact that you just don't perform when the lights are on and the stage is yours, like The Voice or all these other things, you got to perform at a certain point and prove you deserve the job. It also hurts you when the people across the table have said, I'm almost a little bit biased and skeptical because I went the other route the first time on David Culley, and it didn't work out after a year. I can't afford to do that again, so I'm going to scrutinize even more and be less apt to want to go that direction again.
See, I'd go the other way. Like, I'd be more hardcore with, like, who I trust and what I feel despite what's going to be popular or what's going to be criticized by the public. And whenever I look at the Texans head coaching job, what I'm fearful of from, like, a Nick Caserio point of view and, like, hiring the right guy, I'm looking at it from, like, I don't care if it's a dude that's never been a coordinator. I don't care if it's Josh McCown and he's never been a head coach before. He's never coached in the NFL before. What I have more fear from a Nick Caserio point of view is that he hired David Culley. Like, I don't care if it's Vince Lombardi's grandson who's never been a great OC. I don't care if it's Kevin O'Connell who's never called plays. If it's Jonathan Gannon that was the defensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, those dudes could be the right hire. We'll be able to find out in time. I don't have fear that those dudes don't have this great resume. The fear that I have is that Nick Caserio hired David Culley.
Yeah,
that gives me far more fear than experience in resume. And if you want to bring that conversation in together, who had more experience and a better resume than David Culley? At least experience. Maybe not resume, but experience.
I was going to say, because here's the thing. The other thing that you're being graded against, and that's why the deck is somewhat stacked against you in terms of having an opportunity like that and having that beat the guy, is the fact that you took a guy with those very set of circumstances and brought him in and said, with your 17-plus years of coaching in the NFL, you've seen how it's done correctly. You won't swing and miss. You will pick things up on the fly, but you will do a good job. And then he didn't. So now you're not only up, even the guy coming in has to realize, I'm not just up against Nick Caserio to do a good job. I'm up against the ghost of David Culley, who, while David Culley was doing exactly what I want to do, he failed miserably. And there's no other way to put it, no matter how much good of a guy you think he is, because he only lasted a year. So you look at it and say, at a certain point, somewhere along the line, whether you did it in the NFL or not, whether you were a head coach or a coordinator or not, you have to prove you can lead others. You have to prove you can make tough decisions. You have to prove that you can have one-on-one tough conversations, and you can make it in such a way that people aren't going to resent you. They're going to want to go to bat and go to war with you on a daily basis.
Mike Tannenbaum was on the bench earlier this week talking about the experience of Josh McCown. This is a former NFL GM. Now, he wasn't a great NFL GM, but he talked about McCown's lack of experience and how it doesn't bother him.
If he has the right staff around him, guys, and he's sitting at the top of the food chain, I think it can work. They're going to need to be patient. He's going to make mistakes. I know what it was like to be a first-year GM, how many mistakes I made. So I'm really okay with it. It has to be something that there's alignment from ownership to Nick Caserio and patience to develop.
There's a difference there in being successful and his quote of, it can work. Sure, it could work. Yeah. But David Culley could have worked too. Here's the other here's the bigger thing to me. Now the assistants become hyper important, even more so, right? And now I have even more questions about Nick Caserio picking his assistants, because the one thing that he's got to do is surround himself with an abundance of experience if he doesn't have any. No matter what he can do as a guy that everybody believes in, knows his football, and knows he's going to be a guy that someday is going to get there, he better have more than Lovie Smith in terms of ex-NFL head coaching
that's
experience.
That's pretty solid, though. You
it's
get
a good
Lovie
start.
And Romeo and Pep Hamilton, and they're already on the payroll. I mean, that's a pretty decent
as
staff.
As long as they're still there and yep. You continue to go further than that with more and more experience across the board that allows the men in the room. And then you got to be open-minded and say, hey, we're going to make a lot of decisions as a group because I'm going to lean on you guys and your experiences to tell me right, wrong, or indifferent.
Tannenbaum and me are saying that it can work. And that is a dangerous spot to be in, because from Nick Caserio's point of view, you have to have a stronger opinion than that. You have to be willing to say this will work.
The one concern that Joel was kind of working his way towards that I have. Anytime, you know, they say they want a leader as a head coach, somebody has to get the schemes right. And when you have coordinators who are good, they leave. So we're all assuming Pep Hamilton's the future offensive coordinator, right?
I would assume so.
Let's say he's great at it. He's not going to stick around. So, like, even if you find success with the next head coach, I think it's really hard to sustain it. I would point to Atlanta when Kyle Shanahan left. Things absolutely fell apart.
That's going to be the philosophy of Nick Caserio, though. Like, that's the way it's going to be with Nick Caserio. He's flat out told you that. He said, we want to be a person who is a leader. It's not so much about the X's and O's. So while it's a good point, that's what we're looking at with Nick Caserio as the GM. I mean, the writing's on the wall.
But you
that's what they're going to be.
At a certain point, it still comes down to the X's and O's and execution and the game plan. And the thing is, to Brendan's scenario too, the thing that's scary is if you do hit it right for a year or so, but then that coordinator skips for another gig, you're starting from square one, and you don't know the next guy is going to be as easy to work with as the last guy and have the same system and do the same things. You were talking about it from a Cunningham perspective, but it's across the board, and it's got you can't put square pegs in round holes. You can't have a system that works for a year, and then that guy in that playbook disappears and expect to have the same success the next year unless there's continuity and consistency everywhere else. And in the NFL, that doesn't happen because position coaches are constantly changing, and so are the systems.
Yeah, I mean, there's examples of coaches that have won that don't have their hand in, you know, the offensive play calling, the defensive play calling. Pete Carroll is the one that comes to mind. I don't think Tomlin has much say in offense or defensive play calling every single week as well. But from, like, what's interesting about the Tannenbaum point is that this is a former GM that is probably the most positive person with the idea of a Josh McCown coming to the Texans. He is a GM versus you and me and people that talk on a microphone on a daily sports talk radio show or people that write stories on ESPN. Those are the people that have the negative thoughts. So you have the GM, former GM, saying it's cool, it's fine, it can work, and then you have the media saying how terrible of an idea it is. I'll take the GM's point
of
view.
We're not seeing everybody we talk to that has football experience coming to the support of Josh McCown.
No.
But this is one guy. But you just said yourself, he wasn't a great general manager. And I like Mike Tannenbaum, and I love what he brings to the table on ESPN, and I love his experience. But I think that when you look at it, he had personal experience with Josh McCown, and that's great. But sometimes when doing what we do and others are paid to do, whether it be from a team perspective or otherwise, you have to evaluate all of the details and all of the situations and understand sometimes.
But what
the guy
are you evaluating it off of, though? You're evaluating based on what Josh McCown was.
He was never in a situation other than high school football or being a backup quarterback.
There's not much.
How do you know either way? And is it too big of a risk because of what you just got done with?
Whenever we evaluate coaches, we're evaluating based on their history. We're evaluating it based on their resume, and we're making decisions on who we think Team A, B, C should hire based on the resume and the experience of a coordinator, of an assistant coach. Whereas GMs, they're not looking at it based on that. It's going to get you in the room, but they're going to hitch their wagon to who they feel is the best hire. Let's continue this on the other side. Houston, if you want to get in, you can. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Also, people are overreacting to the Giants are out of the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes. We'll do it both when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now, I want to tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Look, I've been talking to Fitz over the last couple days. I'm going to have a new fence put in my yard, and I wouldn't go anywhere else than Fitz Roofing because I know they do the best in the business. They come out and do a free, no-obligation inspection. They give you an estimate of what it would cost, and they work with you every step of the way. Their customer service, second to none. Their warranties, better than anybody else. Their ratings, top-notch in the city of Houston across the board. Their products, the best products, starting with CertainTeed shingles. Whether it's a roofing issue, a leaky roof, or a full roof replacement on your business or your home, or home repairs, or a fence in your yard like I'm doing, there's only one place to check with. It's Fitz Roofing. Check with them first and make sure if you want to go with them, they're the best. Because of the fact that you can find out all the different things they do other than just roofing, you can go to FITZroofing.com. But because they do free no obligation inspections, it doesn't cost you anything for them to at least come out and see what you want to do or what you're dealing with and how they might be able to help you. And if you don't want to go with them, you don't have to. But if you do, you have all the backing of all those positives and being the best in so many categories. FITZroofing.com or get that free no obligation inspection today. 832-521-3001. It's Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
This is ESPN 97.5. Real fun sports. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Having the conversation about experience, resume, all of that, Mike Tannenbaum, former GM, saying that it can work with Josh McCown, which is a pretty unpopular opinion from pretty much everybody. I guess the question that I have, and Lamont tweeting into us saying that, Caserio hiring Culley has made me think the dude is out of his league, but I'm still trying to trust him. And that's where I'm at, too.
I think everybody's trying to trust
him. That's where I'm at. And look, David Culley, how much of the David Culley hire are you putting on Nick Caserio's evaluation? Because from our viewpoint, it was a bridge hire. It was a stopgap. It was just a placeholder until you were ready to start winning. Now, it came sooner than we all expected. I thought he'd be here 2 years, not just the one. So I can look at the David Culley hire, and I can even look past that, which it might be alarming that the dude that hired David Culley were willing to give him a free pass, even though he fired him 1 year into a five-year deal. I'm willing to look past that. Maybe that's me being a honk and a homer, because I never really expected David Culley to be like the future of the Houston sure. Texans anyways.
But that's okay. So let me ask you a question, and I don't want to misquote you, because in the discussions we've had previously, you used the open mind, wanting me to be open-minded about McCown the same way Jason Kidd or Derek Fisher or these guys did the same thing in the NBA.
Well, I mean, it has worked in other sports. Steve Kerr has done it. A lot of baseball managers have done it. Is that an apples-to-apples comparison to the NFL? No, it's not. I'm willing to agree to that.
So, but this is where I was going with that, right? The same way I said, like, his entire staff has to have experience, and his coordinators have to probably both be ex-NFL head coaches or longtime coordinators, right?
I think the staff that's in place right now is suitable for a Josh McCown type to take
because
over.
Because he's already a risk. Even Tannenbaum said
he's going
to make
a mistake.
What's
the risk about it, though? Pep Hamilton's a former OC. Lovie Smith's a former DC who's
it's
had
fine.
Success.
It's fine.
Been
it could be better,
other
but it's
places.
Fine.
Romeo Crennel's around.
But here's where else I'm going with that, all right? When you talk about the guys that got the gigs in the other situations, they had long-term careers as a successful player. The worst-case scenario was a Steve Kerr, who was a sniper and known as a shooter, and not like a regular starting guy that everybody leans on.
Well,
but Derek Fisher and Jason Kidd.
Fisher was a role player.
He was a starter on the Lakers, and he was a big-time player.
But he wasn't their star.
Jason
you know?
Kidd's a Hall of Famer. So
see, I have a hot take when it comes to former athletes that if you're a star player, you're never
going
to be a
this.
Good coach.
At least these guys had long-term careers as players. Josh McCown had a long-term career carrying a clipboard.
He was still a player, though. I mean, he was a backup
quarterback. But it's different when you're experiencing everything and understanding the game from being out there on every single play, whether you were a Hall of Famer, an all-star, or a role player.
I don't think that translates
to coaching. As
opposed
to a guy that's sitting on the side at all. I just think that there's, and that's just another way of looking at this and saying, look, I totally believe that if Josh McCown was your David Culley and there was no David Culley and this was your first hire, that a lot more people would be on board with at least open-minded to it. But because of what happened with David Culley and who did it, and they're still making decisions, if they do it again, he's already coming in with more negatives than positives, and he's already coming in, and everybody's looking to scrutinize instead of looking at him to give the benefit of the doubt.
I don't want a GM that's trying to make a hire, though, based on approval rating. Like, I don't want him to be trying to win over
an organization
a fan
base. That's based on it.
You think the Texans are?
They hired
David Culley. They fired him after 1 year.
But they didn't plan on firing him after 1 year. And
they kept Jack Easterby. I don't think they care at all what people think.
But then they had a general manager come out and tell you that he's not involved in football operations to try and soothe it over so that people don't look as negatively on the organization. The same reason why they could have traded J.J. Watt for a third-round pick, they didn't and said, hey, if you come out and say this was your call, not ours, we'll let you go wherever you want to go because it means that much to us because, you know, they were worried about image.
But they also traded DeAndre Hopkins for a second rounder and a bag of chips.
But I don't think Cal signed off on that one. I'm not sure the PR staff ever got wind of that one to know how to try and spin that one.
713-780-ESPN, circling it back to the experience and the resume conversation. Like, Josh McCown, you're obviously on one side of it. Like, it would be a bad hire in your opinion. I'd be willing to give it a shot. I'm not saying it's going to be a home run hire, but I'd be willing to listen. I'd be willing to see the entertainment value of it.
I don't like it. And I don't like it for the reasons stated, especially because they swung and missed on Culley.
And that's the question that brings up another conversation. Like, the fact that David Culley was a failure, to me, shouldn't have any impact on what happens for the second go-around when you're hiring a head coach. But, like, the question I was going to ask you, how do you know it's the wrong hire? Like, if it is Josh McCown, how do you know it's the wrong hire?
But here's where I'm going, though, Jeremy. Why keep bringing Culley back in? Because that Culley situation matters. It's like, you know, what was it? Whenever you shame me once, shame on me. Shame me twice, shame on you. Because if you found out that for whatever reason, going this route with an inexperienced head coach was your choice the first time and you failed miserably after 1 year, the last thing you're going to do is go to that well again, because you got to learn your lesson at a certain point. Whether the lesson has to be taught by an owner that's not going to tolerate it happening again, or but you can't afford to do it the second time around if you did it the first time and you failed that badly.
Like, do what, though? Because
hire an inexperienced head coach with no coordinator experience, no head coaching experience. And for the most part, he coached his kids' high school team last year and passed on being on a staff as an NFL head coach.
As an assistant head coach, if you believe the general. Like, to me, it's two different things, because Cully had decades of experience in the NFL and was a failure. Josh McCown has literally zero experience in the NFL. That's why I was trying to define what you meant, because to me, they're on two totally opposite sides of the spectrums. Like, to me, you can't define a head coach as a failure until the head coach has coached for a little while, right? Like, David Cully, was he a failure as a head coach? Yes, he was. But at what point did you think that? You thought that after a year that he was coaching, or after he was biting on his tongue? Like, whoever the hire is going to be isn't a failure at the moment that you hired him. The failure has to come somewhere in the future, at some point going forward. Like, and a lot of people are having this thought where if you hire Josh McCown, what a failure of a hire that is. You missed on that hire. How do you know? You don't know that. The thought that the Texans would have, if it is a Josh McCown, is that they're hiring the next head coach guru, that they're hiring a dude who they trust to be a very good head coach in the NFL, and the reason they're doing it now is because they feel they have to do it before the resume catches up with a Josh McCown. They're trying to hire a Doug Peterson before he turns into a Doug Peterson. And with the Texans being where they are the worst NFL head coaching opening. Dan Quinn is returning to be a DC before he even has any thought about the Houston Texans. Byron Leftwich, nowhere on the Texans' radar. You're talking about Brian Flores, an under 500 head coach for 3 years. Vince Lombardi's grandson, Joe. Hines Ward, Kevin O'Connell, Josh McCown, Jonathan Gannon. Like, none of those dudes moved the meter. So what the Texans have to do, because they are the worst opening right now in the NFL, they have to think outside of the box, and they're trying to hit on a head coach before the resume catches up to the caliber of what they feel is going to be a great head coach.
You want to get some air now? Because you were on a roll there. Here's the thing that I would start out with. I understand what you're saying in terms of you got to take that chance. You got to think out of the box. You got to get that guy before someone else gets that guy and he turns into be that guy. We were saying the exact same thing about Jerod Mayo like a week ago. So, and they didn't get that guy either. So you didn't get that guy, and he's a Patriots way guy, and that's the guy that you supposedly look like you want to hire, is a guy from that kind of tree and that kind of background and that experience. But yeah, you want to get this guy who's going to be more like that guy and have a better chance to be the guy? There's just too many flailing swings in the wind for me, that, and because of what they did last year, it does matter that I would hire a guy that, if that's the case, and that's suddenly where you think that you have to go, then give it to Pep Hamilton, because at least Pep Hamilton's been in the system for a year, and he knows what you're trying to do, and he knows what you're trying to run, and he knows who's running the show, whether it be Jack also as well as Nick, or just he knows what Nick's looking for. But give it to him, because at least he's been there, done that for you, and has a full idea of what you want to do. Give it to guys that have already been in the building then, instead of just completely going, not only do I got to do this and do this outside the box, but I got to go so far outside, I'm not even looking inside my own organization, where at least I have a couple of candidates right under my own roof that probably wouldn't say no or turn down the interview.
See, to me, you need to hire somebody with a high risk, high reward. And it might blow up spectacularly, and it might be a terrible decision, but maybe it's the home run hire. To me, you need more of the volatility versus the middle of the pack. You know, there's not going to be many ups. There's not going to be many downs of like a Brian Flores, who's going to be Mr. Consistent. Not many highs, not many lows. I'd rather go with the risk. I'd rather go with the dude that could be the next best great head coach, but he could also be a complete flame out and absolutely terrible. I like the volatility. I would cheer for the volatility. I want that to happen as opposed to the middle of the pack.
I just think that Pep's in your own building, under contract, on your staff, and he's been a head coach.
Do you think he has that high upside, though?
On the XFL level, as well as other things he's done.
So is Jeff Fisher.
But I'm just saying, from an experience standpoint, he brings a ton more than
McCown. Do you think he has the upside?
I think he does.
Pep? Okay.
Yeah, because I think that a lot of people, there's a reason why teams were looking at him, and then all of a sudden he's turning it down. They're obviously higher on him and they see something in that they wanted to keep him, and they wanted to keep him from going and being a coordinator elsewhere.
I don't hate Pep, to be very clear and to let the record state. I don't hate the idea. I just don't want the middle of the pack. Give me the volatility. Give me the dude that's going to be a home run great hire, but he could also be a failure. I'll take that any day of the week. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we come back, we'll talk to one of the Wheelhouse men. Do we not give Caserio enough credit for his first draft? Also, we'll run around the four McDonald's creations, the menu hacks, with one of the Wheelhouse men when we return as well. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Well, guys, we've got conference championship weekend coming up. We've got NBA basketball all week, college basketball every single night. You want to have a sports bet somewhere, you got to do it at the only place where your money is safe. You are secure in doing what you do, and they take care of their customers every day. It's mybookie.ag. That's right. I constantly am encouraging you. You bet your money with mybookie.ag. It makes the most uninteresting game more interesting, but along the way, they take care of you with so much more than anybody else will do for you. For the first thing that you want to know, your money's safe and secure. You're not running a risk with some overseas or out on the sea type business where you put your money there and then you can't be fully guaranteed it's going to be okay and there when you want to bet with it and get it in your pocket when you win with it. At mybookie.ag, you can. And right now, they're taking care of their customers like only they can do. Not only is your money safe and secure, when you win, they're going to pay you, and they take care of you over and over with different kind of marketing opportunities like the one they're running right now. This promotion where up to $1,000, any money you put into your account, existing customers, previous customers, and new customers, they're going to double it. That means you put $100 in right now, getting ready for the weekend, almost instantaneously, your account's going to say $200 in your account. That means more money in your account, more money to bet with, more chances to win. And they also have prop bets, in-game betting, and the greatest things that they're doing also to be more customer-friendly is you can bet now with crypto. You can do with your Bitcoin as well as your credit card or other ways that you want to put money in your account. You want to do it on your laptop or your phone or your tablet. You can bet on all of those. In-game betting allows you to hedge bets. It allows you to make up for bad bets. It allows you to keep money on the line and chances to win even when the game's already started. But it means you have to bet with mybookie.ag because they do all those things and more. Check them out right now, mybookie.ag. To get that double your next deposit bonus up to $1,000, put in the promo code BET975 and get ready for the weekend. Bet on some NBA and college tonight and get going at the only place where your money is safe and secure and you can bet any way you want to bet. Bet anywhere, any place, anytime, but bet with mybookie.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The issue is that Josh is Easterbee's guy. Let's make a splash with somebody that's not tied to Easterbee. 1900 as Cody Stutes, one of the three Wheelhouse men, joining us now. That's the stain that Josh McCown, that's hard to look past, right? Is that if he is the one that is hired, he was Easterbee's guy. And the stain of that is hard for the city and Texans fans to overlook. Like, I get that. And I'm more supportive of Josh McCown than pretty much anybody, but I'm even willing to admit that you have the stain of Easterbee. And like, that's one of the biggest reasons not to bring in McCown, is that everybody's going to think he's Easterbee's guy, and you're never going to give McCown a fair shake.
My biggest reason that I don't want McCown is he doesn't have any experience, but the only reason he's in the conversation is because he's Easterbee's guy. So you have to reconcile both of those things being the same. Like, you can't sit in a room, look around at everybody who's a decision maker in the organization, and say this guy that's never coached in the National Football League is more qualified and better for us than insert list of coaches who have coached in the National Football League.
I don't care about the experience. The Easterbee angle of that is something that is troublesome. Like, it's just from a perception alone point of view.
Can I give you an analogy that may change your experience conversation?
Of course.
Okay. Say you needed open heart surgery, and you could have the top medical student in the entire country perform his very first open heart surgery on you.
Okay.
Or you could have a doctor who's performed hundreds of open heart surgeries perform the open heart surgery on you. Which would you pick?
That's an interesting comparison, because now you're talking life and death as opposed to winning football games. It's quite the reach, but who's to say that the person who has never performed the open heart surgery wouldn't do a better job than the doctor who has had it? Who would I pick? I'd pick the dude that's done it many times before.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that he would be better at the job. It just gives me better peace of mind.
I personally love the analogy.
It gives me better peace of mind.
The top medical student might do your open heart surgery right. And if that was your only option.
Or better.
If that was
he
your
also
only,
could kill you.
If that was your only option, you would take that. That's not the Texans' only option. Like, they have options outside of McCown. And, yes, there is a chance it could work, and there is a chance it would end up better than the experienced one. But there's more risk involved.
Yeah.
And if I'm talking about minimizing risk while maximizing success, I'm not taking that super risky
I'll give you another
option.
Analogy. My mom needed a knee replacement.
You guys are using these health analogies like it's football.
In part, it's someone's health and well-being that's affected by it, too. And a fan base and a bunch of other people, too, including the players in the locker room. And my mom needed it. And they were like, go away from the traditional route. We've got this newfound two-piece replacement knee. It's going to be so much better. You're going to have so much more flexibility. Your quality of life is going to be 10 times better. Go this route, not that route. And she was just so enamored by the fact that this could give me the same quality of life. And even better than all the other people that have had the knee surgery, the replacement knee that works, we're going to try it. It failed miserably. And then, oh, by the way, the little fine print they didn't tell you was, you can't go get the other one now.
Oh, no.
See, that's the boomer bust. And that, unfortunately for her, that was the bust, right? Like, it didn't turn out good. But if you had the bill of goods and it turned out well, it would have turned out better.
But,
and that's, yes, there's more risk. Yes, there's more volatility.
I have a non-life analogy for you.
Okay.
My mom is a fantastic banker.
We know this.
Okay. If you were getting married and your wife said, go find the person that's going to make the wedding cake, you might consider Mama Stutes. But Mama Stutes has never made a big 3-tier wedding cake that serves 100 people. Now, she's really good. She might be able to do it, but there's a lot of risk involved in her doing it. The likelihood that she can achieve that is lower than if you go to someone who's made hundreds of those cakes.
Right. I see the point. But if you look at the people that they've interviewed, none of them are those guys. Like, other than Brian Flores, who has 3 years of experience, but he did it at a mediocre level. Joe Lombardi doesn't have that experience. Hines Ward doesn't have that experience. Kevin O'Connell doesn't have that experience. Jonathan Gannon doesn't have that experience. So your comparison, you're using dudes with a lot of history in the game that have done it, like the heart surgeon, the baker.
These people don't have that either. They've all made cakes. McCown's never made a cake.
They've never made a cake as a head coach, which is a totally different job.
And I don't put Flores in the same category, and I think that he's negatively looked upon because of his first year. But his last 2 years, I don't think he flailed. And I think that what he was able to do, especially when a lot of locker rooms would have just completely gone south on him, no, he didn't make the playoffs, but he actually kept guys engaged in which they won multiple games in a row and made a run to be on the cusp of the playoffs. And that's saying something in the NFL.
Josh and Beaumont saying, what do y'all make of the Texans players that voice support for McCown on the Texans tweet about interviewing him? I didn't see that. I don't know anything about that.
Was it a Texans tweet?
Three of those four guys were said to be free agents. So,
what's the correlation there? That's interesting.
Well, I mean, I don't care what the free agent.
Maybe they want a job. Maybe they want a contract back with the Houston Texans.
That's when someone says, like, oh, look, when you look at, like, certain players, like, yeah, obviously KGH speaks favorably of the organization.
Yeah.
They were the only one that gave him a job. Christian Kirksey speaks favorably of the organization. They were the only organization giving him a job.
They want a new contract.
Malik Collins. They want a new contract. Like, Nick Caserio said,
and you're also evaluated on the fact that if you go and crap on the team that just gave you an opportunity, you ain't getting one from somebody else either, because they're like, do we want a guy that's going to be a good locker room guy that's going to just do the company way, or do we want the guy that on the way out the door is going guns blazing?
Right.
You know what that speaks to? It speaks to the culture. It speaks to the culture that the Houston Texans have.
Oh, the
or
culture,
don't have.
The culture that they spell with, what, 13 L's?
I see what you did there.
Culture.
Yeah, 4-13. I see what you did there. All right, Nick Caserio, Pro Football Focus, ESPN Plus. They work together now. They put together this, you know, who had the best draft in 2021. They used WAR as a something that they used to measure
There's
who had the best draft.
And,
it's Football WAR now. Pro Football Focus. Get used to it.
I like that.
Nick Caserio finished second behind only his daddy in Bill Belichick, who finished first on this Pro Football Focus WAR. Are we giving Nick Caserio enough credit for the draft that he had without a first, without a second?
No, we're not giving him enough credit, but you got to put into context what he's achieved. He didn't achieve any star players.
I said it's incomplete because he didn't have a first. He didn't have a second. So you can either swing or miss or hit it big.
Well, to go 5-for-5 with guys that are on the two deep and that will be on the two deep going into next year, when you had to start this year by cutting a fifth-round pick, I mean, that's a good job by Nick Caserio.
It was good, right? Yeah. But I said it was incomplete because you didn't have a first or a second, which are so vital to either turn it around quicker or failing miserably if they don't succeed. And then you're also in a situation where all your draft picks, no matter where they were taken, are going to see the field immediately, whereas other teams, if they're good, you might not see it for a year or two.
You know, I hadn't thought about that. The roster situation was so poor that guys saw the field earlier than if they were in a better organization. Now, I think Roy Lopez would be the exception. Vincent Taylor got hurt. That was the guy they were going to play in that spot. Roy Lopez stepped up and played really well. Like, Nico was the starter from day one. He got hurt in Cleveland. He was gone for a few weeks. He came back. Wallow is a guy that played late in the year because of injuries. He's fine. He's a nice special teams player. He's what Dylan Cole was supposed to be, I guess,
yeah,
if you remember that name from a couple of years ago. So it was a fine draft. It gets me excited when he has more ammunition overall and he has better picks for him to make some selections.
It's his biggest positive. It's his biggest pro after 1 year on the job. McDonald's putting together four menu hacks that have been going around, but you can now order them. They're going to be on the menu, I suppose. Hash brown McMuffin, sausage McMuffin with egg plus the hash brown. Crunchy McDouble, six-piece nuggets on a double cheeseburger. Surf and turf, Filet-O-Fish plus the double cheeseburger. And then the land, air, and sea, the Big Mac, the McChicken, and the Filet-O-Fish. Where do you stand? What's your number one pick here out of these four?
The Big Mac, McChicken, and Filet-O-Fish feels like the texture would be off, so I'm out on that.
Too much bun, too.
Yeah,
too much of everything.
Yeah, too much of everything. I mean, some of these things already do.
I don't like the mixed flavor of fish with the burger either.
That doesn't fit.
The surf and turf?
Right.
Yeah, yeah, steak and shrimp about the only surf and turf
I don't
I'm
like
doing.
It otherwise.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I went hash brown McMuffin.
That's
played it safe.
One.
Well,
yeah.
I already do that. I already put the hash brown on my McMuffin.
Well, you're innovative. You're ahead of the time. You're
these
way
cool
ahead of
anymore.
You're a maverick.
If you previously did this and now you order it, I liked them before they were cool.
I would agree with that. I would agree
That's
with that
exactly
100%.
Right.
What do you have coming up on the Wheelhouse?
We got lots of stuff we're going to get to. We're going to talk some draft. And is the waiting game for the Texans better or worse for the chances of McCown ending up as the head coach?
We'll be listening 3-7, the Wheelhouse on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Thanks to Brendan doing all the hard work. He's blank on Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next.
ESPN 97.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.